Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special, episode 115.
Emily Sander, I challenge you to invest in yourself, invest in others, develop your influence, and impact the world by using your time, your talent, and your treasures to live out your calling. Having the ability to grow in your leadership is key, and one way to be inspired to do that is to listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader. A lot of times I see managers and leaders only look for what their employees or team members are doing wrong. So that's how they see management. Okay, I'm supposed to find the mistakes and then criticize them and then make sure they don't do it ever again. Yes, there is a time and place for that. But equally, if not more importantly, it's look for what they're doing well.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world.
In tonight's Saturday Night Special, I ask Emily Sander to share with you how she specializes in getting leaders to the next level as a coach. I also ask Emily to share what the failure loop is and why it matters. And Emily also shares with you why attitude and aptitude are related to being a great leader and lots more. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type, but if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone, and we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch. Emily has spent more than 15 years in the business world, but when she realized that her favorite role was mentoring leaders, she decided to pursue coaching. As a C-suite executive and ICF certified coach, she combines her experience and proven insights with a keen ability to understand each client's unique personality and situation. She is the author of the book, Hacking Executive Leadership. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for... Whoops, there we go right away. Thanks, Scott. Good to be here.
So, Emily, you've had a lot of different roles, a lot of different responsibilities over the years. We just talked a little bit in the intro about how you've worked in corporate, you're leading teams, especially teams in these kind of rapid environments, rapid growth environments. And you're now working also as a coach, helping other leaders get to the next level. How has that corporate experience led you to and helped you do this coaching in a way that's effective and authentic?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be the coach that I am today without that experience. I think going through the first time manager and leading your first team meeting, going to your first board meeting, having your first hire and fire, all those things, and then rising through the ranks and seeing different leaders and working under different leaders and working in different companies and in team environments just gives you this eclectic group of experiences that you can draw from. So with my clients, I feel like I can relate to whatever they're going through, whether that's a challenge or an obstacle they're overcoming or a great opportunity or something that they've done to celebrate. So I can help navigate where I say, hey, I can draw on my experience actually going through it and being in that environment for 15 years, but also draw on my coaching training and that discipline itself. So those things together, I think, have really helped me become an effective coach for leaders all over the world.
You've seen a lot of different leaders. What are some of the examples of really good leadership that you've...
I think during this last year, 2020. So COVID hit and no one could have predicted that. And we talk about being adaptable and creative problem solving with leadership, but no one could have predicted that. And I think a lot of the strong leaders I saw were actually really vulnerable and would stand up in front of their all staff meeting and say, everyone is worried about their jobs and everyone's worried about this or that. What is the market going to do? What does that mean for the company? What does that mean for me? And sometimes they didn't know. And so they were honest about that. And they said, hey, here are the factors we're looking at. And here's how we're going to be approaching this decision-making process. But at this moment, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know. And I'll check in with you next Tuesday at 3 p.m. or whatever. And that was actually a big sign of strength. And I talked to a lot of leaders who are going through some version of that.
Yeah, actually, I'm in a leadership position with some work that I do. And everyone's asking me, is this going to happen? And I'm like, boy, if you could answer that question, I will pay you a lot of money if you can give me the answer to that question, because I don't know. So let's flip it on its head. What are some examples of, I don't want to use the word bad, but let's just say less than stellar leadership, perhaps, that you've seen?
It is the opposite. Is never a great solution to pretty much anything. My dad was a lifeguard when he was younger, and he said, Emily, the people who would get in trouble would be right by the edge of the pool and they would panic and then they would go down. Any situation.
You can drown in water that you can stand up in.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're arm's length away from the edge. So just grab hold. But people panicking in those types of situations, in business situations, is somewhat of a natural reaction, but being self-aware enough and in self-control enough and having the mechanisms to help you navigate through that, I think are good. So when I see people, I can tell when someone is out of control, meaning they're talking really fast and they're reacting to everything and they're making these emotional responses and they've got to bring themselves down a bit. 2020 was full of the good examples and full of the quote unquote bad examples as well.
Sure. So one of the things you talk about in Hacking Executive Leadership is this idea of the failure loop. Can you share a little bit about, first off, what is that? What do you mean by that? And then why that matters to leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the book, you have a little graph, but it's a series of individual loops that go up and to the right. So collectively, they all go up and to the right. And this is a way to think about failure. So it's a framework to think about failure. A lot of people, they say the word failure and they have an automatic negative connotation. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I don't want to fail. I don't want to be a failure, which makes sense. But if you think about it in this framework, you can actually transform failure into progress. So in the individual loop, at the bottom of an individual loop, you're actually going the opposite direction you want to go, so down to the left. And so that is a point of, ooh, I didn't do as well as I wanted to there. I wasn't as great in that presentation. I wasn't as great in that interaction with that person as I would have liked to be. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to pull the learning out and take the lesson and say, okay, let me acknowledge this and let me find what I need to do better and then apply it next time. And you just propelled yourself up to the next loop. So back up and to the right. And I think a lot of people get really self-critical and really down on themselves when they have a quote unquote failure event and they just stop and they go, oh, I sit on the floor, throw my hands up, declare myself a failure. And if they would just keep going and use that as a learning experience, then they get better. So I think that's important because as leaders in the business world, we are presented with a lot of tough decisions over and over again. Mm-hmm. And as you move up, the decisions don't get easier, they get harder. So when you're the CEO of a company, that problem, that issue has probably gone through 10, 12 different people who are all smart and capable, and it lands on your desk because it's a complex, difficult one. And so you need to be able to be confident in your decision-making and be able to move forward. Mm-hmm.
So what then stalls people out at the bottom of that loop?
A lot of things. So one is it feels crappy at the bottom of the loop. So I think we've all felt that gut punch of, oh my gosh, I just embarrassed myself. Or, oh my gosh, how could I be so stupid? And it just feels crappy. And so, okay, I don't even want to go close to that again. So I'm just going to do nothing and hold still or stop trying. The what other people think of me or what other people could be thinking of me, maybe they're not, but in our own heads, everyone's paying attention to us and pointing the finger. that holds people back a lot. And I'm guilty of that as well. So it's very common and it's a real true thing. But those two things, the feeling of it and also the perception of what other people are thinking about it, holds a lot of people.
One of the other concepts that you talk about in the book is this idea of aptitude and attitude. And first off, those words sound similar, but can you talk a little bit about what they are? What's the difference? And again, why does that kind of thought process, where does that come into leadership?
So aptitude and attitude are the two big buckets that you want to use for recruiting a new team member. And you can also use it to assess your existing team. So aptitude are the hard skills that someone would need to do well in the role. So if you're in finance, you might have to have a CPA. If you're a technologist, you have to code in a certain language. You have to have those hard skills. On the attitude side, those are sometimes referred to as soft skills, but I don't really like that because they're equally, if not more important than the hard skills. But they're, how do you collaborate with others? Are you a team player? Are you a positive, solution-oriented person to work with? A lot of people say, hey, Emily's great at her job, but I cringe every time I have to do a project. But I've heard it described as the brilliant jerk or the friendly incompetent. So ideally, you'd want to have a team member who is high in both categories, high in both aptitude and attitude. They're really good at what they do, and they're awesome to work with. And so those are your top performers. You want to make sure you know who they are and recognize them and reward them. And then on the flip side, if you've got someone in a deficit in both categories, so they can't do the technical piece of the job, and they're also a pain in the butt to work with, those are your underperformers, and they need equal attention for training or support or encouragement. But if they can't get there, then maybe they're best suited for another role. But that's a framework and rubric you can use for recruiting and hiring and also team building assessment.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, those two are the obvious categories. In other words, if they're high in both, I think most people have no problem seeing them and going, okay, top performer, reward. If they're low in both, okay, either coach them up or coach them out. They've either got to, you know, figure out a way to move up, or maybe they're in the wrong role, or maybe even in the wrong career, or wrong company, or whatever. It's the other two buckets that I think we struggle with. They're great at their job, but their attitudes in terms of hard skills, they can do everything you ask them to do. They knock it out of the park, but they leave bodies in their wake, that kind of person. Or the conversely, the other one, everybody loves them. They're everyone's favorite person, but every time they do anything, somebody has to double check it because they screw it up. So as a leader, how do you deal with those other two buckets?
Yeah. So if you can train something, then train it. So if they just don't have the knowledge to do it, so maybe someone is fresh out of college, it's their first job, and they have academically done some of the technical pieces, but have never done it in practice. So they're struggling on the aptitude piece. But you go, oh, okay, I know why that is. I just need to give them a little bit more attention, maybe give them some more training courses. You can plus that side up real good. If it's something that's not so teachable, so sometimes you can't teach someone to have a good attitude, you can bring it to their attention, say, hey, here's what I observed in the team meeting. You gave a sarcastic answer to Scott when he asked you a question, or hey, we have some deadlines that we need to hit and you always miss them. You can offer those observations and see, oh, I didn't know that was important to be nice to Scott in the meeting, or oh, I didn't know that deadline was a real thing. There it might be bringing it to their attention and also resetting expectations to make sure they know it. And that's what you can do. And if they come up higher and say, oh, okay, I'll meet that expectation, great, you're good. If they still don't, then sometimes it is hard to make someone be positive and make someone have a good attitude.
Yeah. I've been in the position of hiring and firing. I've had those conversations. And in many ways, I used to tell people, I honestly look more at attitude when hiring. Because again, I can teach you how to fill out a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I can't teach you to have a positive attitude nearly as easy.
Absolutely.
Before, we've only touched on the book a little bit with the Saturday Night Special tonight. We won't be able to go into everything. But before we move on to a couple of questions that I try to ask every guest, is there anything else you'd like to share from the book that's a nugget that's really important?
Yeah, there's a couple. I think one of the, back to your good and bad leadership examples, a lot of times I see managers and leaders only look for what their employees or team members are doing wrong. So that's how they see management. So, okay, I'm supposed to find the mistakes and then criticize them and then make sure they don't do it ever again. Okay, so yes, there is a time for that. But equally, if not more importantly, it's look for what they're doing. Look for what they bring to the table. Each one of your team members has a strength and a skill set, and it might be different than yours, which is actually a good thing. So if you have someone, it's, oh my goodness, like you're good with numbers and a spreadsheet, and that's nails on a chalkboard to me, that's a good compliment to my skill set, or that's a good compliment to the team. So look for those. And a great leader also sees the potential in someone. So they go, oh, Scott's great at his job, but you know what? I think he could run the department one day. I think he has leadership chops in that fashion. And maybe Scott doesn't even know that himself. Maybe that's so far away, that's not even conceivable. But if you plant that seed and say, hey, I think that let me bring you in on my team meeting, just so you can see how I run it or see how I prep for it, that can open up whole bunches of doors for a person. So, you know, yes, look for mistakes and make sure things are done right, but also look for the good things and tell people about them when you.
So one of the questions that I like to ask all of my guests is this one. Of course, my brand is Inspired Stewardship. I look at things through that lens of stewardship. So for you, what does the word stewardship mean and what has its impact been on your life?
Yeah, I think stewardship is taking care of what's been given to you or what's been entrusted to you. And that can have macro level connotations where it's like, hey, sometimes I do zoom out and think about we're all on this earth right now. So we've all been given this earth and this life. And you think about all the people that have come before us and all the people that will hopefully come after us for centuries and centuries. And we're here now, especially when I'm traveling, I'm kind of sitting on a plane and I'm like just me seeing you here, we're already in something together. We're already a cohort of some kind. So I sometimes get in awe of that. And then narrowing that down further, it's, you know, who are the people that are put in my path and who are the people that are put in my life? Those relationships I'm given, so I need to take care of those. Whether that's a long-term relationship, maybe it's a spouse or a lifelong friend, or it could be a very, you know, brief one-off interaction, the cashier at a grocery store or your Uber driver, am I taking care of that relationship and interaction that's been given to me? I think the way that's impacted me is my outlook to life in general and also my day-to-day approach. So I wake up and say, okay, I'm looking forward to the open doors and opportunities that are going to be given to me. And then when I see one, I try to make the most of it. So I keep an eye out for it. And if you pay attention to that, then you'll see more of them. On the receiving end, I've certainly had people take the time and energy to, you know, call out my strengths when I didn't even know that I had them. Early on in my career, I had some great mentors who definitely impacted my overall trajectory, would not be where I am today without them. And they took the time, months, and sometimes years to cultivate my leadership and forge it and sand the rough edges and get me to where I needed to be because they saw that potential in me when I didn't see it myself. I was like, they're like, you're going to run a team one day. You could run a company one day. And I did the like double take around my shoulder, looking around like, do you mean me? No, that can't be possible. But yeah, so I think stewardship is both ways. It's my outlook to life and my approach to what I look for in a day. And then also I've been very blessed and I'm very grateful to have been on the receiving end of some of those positive relationships.
So Emily, now I'll move to what everyone tells me is the easiest question that I ask. I say jokingly, if I could invent a machine and grab you from today and pick you up and move you into the far future, maybe 100 to 150 years, and you were able to magically look back on your life and see that the impact that you've had, what do you hope the impact is that you've left behind on the world? Like I said, the easy question.
Yeah. I would want to see my ripple effect, my cumulative ripple effect. Hopefully, literally, you don't know what your smile can do for someone you're passing on the street. Maybe that changed their whole day and changed their whole trajectory of something they were doing. I know people have said, when you told me this, when I was having a really rough time, that meant so much and what that did. So just, I'm hoping that I would have a positive impact on people, a lasting and meaningful positive impact. And it would be very interesting if the time machine could show you the ripple effects for all the people that you touched and sometimes didn't even know that you had an impact on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things. I was a school teacher for 16 years, and that's one of the things that as a school teacher, you end up thinking about is the kid that you taught sixth grade. And I've got, you know, several that are now doctors or medical researchers or doing other things. And it's, I had a little tiny piece of creating that person, not by any means the full person, but still, I was one step on that journey.
So funny, I had a first grade teacher and I was super shy, painfully shy when I was very young. And she literally said, "Emily, you know that you don't have to be shy anymore if you don't want to." Mm. And I was like, "Oh, I don't?" Like, "Oh, okay. So I guess I won't." I became a little more outgoing. But just her saying that, I remember just epiphany, aha moment. Oh, okay. If that's possible,
I can change my frame.
I'll go do that.
Yeah,
in first grade. Yeah,
Mrs. That's Bauer. Amazing. Yeah. Well, no, that's interesting that you remember that, you know, however many, we don't have to say, but
it was a lot of hairstyles ago. Let's just say that.
Emily is not in sixth grade. It's been a while. So we'll just leave it at that. So what's coming next for you as you move through this journey of doing the coaching, doing the work you're doing, the book being out? What's coming next as you continue to live out your call?
Yeah. So I'm wrapping up a business venture I have now. I'm a chief of staff for a small digital marketing agency. And then I'm hoping to be able to flip full-time into coaching. So I've been doing that along with my day jobs, but hopefully flipping into coaching. It's something that I love. It's something that I think I'm good at. I'm saying that humbly. That's where I feel I make my highest contribution. Writing the book was a collection of all my experiences in the corporate world and my experiences coaching. And it was a way to reach more people. So I really hope that helps a lot of people. And I'm going to do the coaching thing and then also just stay open. So I think if I stay open, and I'll use your tagline from the show to optimize my time, talent, and treasures, if I give myself that prompt each day, it's going to lead me in a good path, open to what's next.
You can find out more about Emily Sanders at nextlevel.coach or follow her on LinkedIn as Emily Sander. I'm going to start over again because I realized I just added an S to your name at the beginning.
No problem. So you're not the first.
I'm sure I'm not. You can find out more about Emily Sander at nextlevel.coach or follow her on LinkedIn as Emily Sander. I'll have links to all of that over in the show notes as well. Emily, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners?
No, I think you hit it. We touched on a few pieces from the book, the failure loop and aptitude and attitude. If you want more of those types of tips and tricks, definitely pick up Hacking Executive Leadership. It's on Amazon. It's on Audible, wherever books are sold. If you're interested in coaching or you have a friend or colleague who would like a business coach, then you can go to my website and we can connect there.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.